Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sarvatara Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvipayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Savadeta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Ranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Vintila Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Niti Namini, Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pachani, Vasisa Sanyani, Pasca Jari Sajani, Vande Ham Sri Guru, Sri Ta, Padakamalam, Sri Guru, Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sahagana, Raghunatham, Vitam, Tam, Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavitam Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Anchakapachu Vishaki Pisanga Vichapati Tanam Pavani Vivajami Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya This is November 11, 2013 in Houston, Texas. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, Text 18. Shailadroni Virakridam Sarvartu Shugunandumaha Dadara Loka Palanam Eka Eva Pratagunan. Please chant. Shailaha, the hills and mountains, Dronibihi, with the valleys between them, Akridam, pleasure grounds for Hiranyakashipu, Sarva, all, Ritushu, in the seasons of the year, Gunam, different qualities, fruits and flowers, Drumaha, the plants and trees, Dadhara, executed, Lokapalanam, of the other demigods in charge of different departments of natural activity. Ekaha, alone, Eva, indeed, Pritak, different, Gunan, qualities. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The valleys between the mountains became fields of pleasure for Hiranyakashipu, by whose influence all the trees and plants produce fruits and flowers profusely in all seasons. The qualities of pouring water, drying, and burning, which are all qualities of the three departmental heads of the universe, namely Indra, Vayu, and Agni, were all directed by Hiranyakashipu alone, without assistance from the other demigods. Purport. It is said that in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tejo Vari Ridham Yata Vinimayaha, this material world is conducted by fire, water, and earth, which combine and take shape. Here it is mentioned that the three modes of nature, Pratak Gunan, act under the direction of different demigods. For example, King Indra is in charge of pouring water, the demigod Vayu controls the air and dries up the water, whereas the demigod controlling fire burns everything. Hiranyakashipu, however, by dint of his austere performance of mystic yoga, became so powerful that he alone took charge of everything without assistance from the demigods. Chaila Joni Virakridam, Sarvatushu Gunam Dumaha, Tadhara Loka Palanam, Eka Eva Putagunam. The valleys between the mountains became fields of pleasure for Hiranyakashipu. By his influence, all the trees and plants produced fruits and flowers produced profusely in all seasons. The qualities of pouring water, drying, and burning, which are all qualities of the three departmental heads of the universe, namely Indra, Vayu, and Agni, were all directed by Hiranyakashipu alone, without assistance from the demigods. So Hiranyakashipu, having achieved great power, decided that he was going to do things better than Krishna's natural arrangement. So he controlled everything himself, and not only did he control everything himself, but he forced the trees and the vegetables, the plants, to produce flowers in all seasons. He didn't follow the natural order. We have here Ritu. He didn't follow the natural order of the seasons. Sarva Ritu means a season. So according to the will of the Lord, everything has its season. There's a very famous section in the Bible, in Ecclesiastes, that says to everything there's a season. There's a time to plant, there's a time to reap, there's a time to make war, and there's a time to make peace. Everything has its season. And we know that in the whole universe there are seasons. This Kali Yuga is like the winter season on the Earth planet. So even for the whole planet, there's this long, the Satya Yuga is like the springtime, and the Treta Yuga is like the summer, and the Dwarpa Yuga is like the fall or the autumn, and then the Kali Yuga is like the winter. And we know the whole universe has its cycles. Bhutva Bhutva Puliyate. It grows and it diminishes. And in our bodies also, we have our seasons. We have our youth and our childhood, our youth, our middle age, our old age, and death. And we have our times of the day. In the early morning, the modes are in equilibrium, and then there's the mode of goodness, and then around sunrise, the mode of passion becomes active, and then in the evening, the mode of ignorance becomes active. And there are different, so there are different times of the day meant for different things, different times of the year meant for different things. So this is the way Krishna has arranged it with seasons. Right? The proper householder, he has relations between husband and wife in the wife's season, in her ritu, not outside of the season. So things are supposed to be done in the proper order. But Hiranyakashipu wanted to force. He wanted to force that it is always the fruitful season. It is always the flowering season. He didn't want to have, there was no rest period. There was no time off. So this force is the opposite of Krishna. Even we see in the spiritual world, there is Astakalya Lila. There is the eightfold pastimes of the Lord. There is a cycle in the day. Krishna has his nighttime pastimes and his early morning pastimes and his forenoon pastimes and his noon pastimes and afternoon pastimes. Although in the spiritual world, there's no time and there's no diminishing. Still, there's this Astakalya Lila, there's these eightfold eternal pastimes. So Krishna is not, his whole mood is that of cycles and flow and waves, and not some kind of constant forcing. Material mentality is that of forcing. Spiritual mentality is that of love and ebbing and flowing, union and separation, union and separation. So we know, you know, I know in my own life, whenever I try to force myself, the result is very bad. You know, if I'm involved in some service and I try to force myself to work so hard that I get no sleep, and then the result is bad. I have some reaction from the body or from the mind. If I try to force myself to do work for which I am not suited, I get some reaction. If I try to force somebody else, so I've dealt a lot with children, and if you try to force children, the overall reaction is very bad.
The children simply become resentful and rebellious. Or they become damaged in some way. Of course, sometimes some force is needed. If the child doesn't want to leave the house and you have to leave the house, sometimes you just have to pick them up and put them in the car. But that cannot be one's general mood with the child. Even with an animal, that cannot be the general mood even when training an animal. I've read a fascinating book some time ago about this young man whose father was a horse trainer. And his father would train the horses. He would capture wild horses in the western part of the country. And then he would train them by tying them up and putting a bag over their head and starving them and beating them until the horse had lost its will and was just so broken that it would just do whatever it was told. And it would take months and months and months and months to train the horse that way. And the horse was full of fear. So this young man, and this father who trained the horse like that, he was also very abusive with his son. His son ended up twice in the hospital from severe injuries from the father. So this boy would go out on the plains and he would watch the horses, the wild horses, and he would see that they had a method of communication with each other. The herds of horses were matriarchal. The chief of each herd was the lead female, the lead mare, and she would control the methods of the herd with various gestures. So he watched for a long time. And then he decided that he would try to train the horses by imitating the gestures of a lead mare. So he had these horses that his father would capture, and he would take these wild horses, and he found that in half an hour he could train the horse without even touching them and without any violence at all. Simply by turning his head in a certain way and looking in a certain direction at a certain time, the horses would be trained, and they'd be trained for life. And he traveled all over the world showing horse trainers how they could train their horses without any force, so that the horses wanted to cooperate. But it was interesting because when he traveled, so many people at that time had been training their horses through beating and starving, and so many times had tied them up. And they didn't like the fact that here somebody was saying you didn't have to do it that way. They became very angry. And they would criticize him, and they would say that he was cheating, and he was taking horses that were already trained, and, you know, and he'd say, okay, bring me your craziest horse. And he would have public demonstrations, even in front of the Queen of England, but there was a lot of backlash against his methods. No, you have to force, you have to force. And I'm sure that all of us have experienced when someone tries to force us, we don't like it. When someone tries to force something on us, you must do this, you have to do this. Especially if they try to force us through fear. Hiranyakashipu, he's forcing through fear. He's not getting the plants and the trees to comply out of love for him. He's forcing them to be always on, basically. To never have a rest cycle, to not go through their natural cycles. Otherwise, he's going to punish them, and he has the power to punish them because he's ruling everything in the universe. You can see why Krishna didn't want him in charge for very long and why Krishna arranged to remove him from his position. But how terrible we feel. If you can think back to the last time somebody tried to force you to do something. Sometimes that force is subtle social pressure. You know, if you don't do this, then people won't like you, or you'll lose your position, or something. Yes?
Family
pressure.
Huh?
Family pressure. Family pressure, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been in situations where I tell people, oh, I'm not hungry, and they bring me this big plate to eat in front. They say, oh, I cooked this just for you, and I made this, and I worked for 4 or 5 hours making this. And I say, but it's 10 o'clock at night, I'm not hungry. And then they put everything in front of me, and they tell me how hard. And that's forcing. We call that a guilt trip. You know, you're in this funny position that, you know, your stomach is full, you don't want to eat anything. So either you have to offend the person by saying, no, I don't want to eat it, or you have to eat it and damage your body. You're in this position where you don't have any any pleasant alternative for yourself. You understand? So that they're trying to force you. They're putting you in a situation of extreme discomfort, where your only choices are difficult choices. And they're hoping if they give you an option, you know, that, okay, I'll have to offend my host, that you'll choose to damage your body rather than offending your host. So this is a kind of force. And it's very unpleasant. You know, and you feel like, well, I don't really know if I want to go to that person's house again, because they're going to try to force me to do things. And in the family, this is very common, that husband, wife, and parents and children try to force each other to do things, and try to manipulate each other, put each other in positions, or in business also, in the academy, governments. And this is, unfortunately, our general mood in the material world. That's our general mood. The out-and-out criminals, the vikarmis, they directly, unabashedly, explicitly force. The thief literally forces his way into your home, breaks the lock on your door, and takes your things without your permission. The rapist just takes without permission. Yes, so that is the criminal. The criminal explicitly forces. So the more civilized person forces more subtly, through some sort of psychological manipulation or circumstantial manipulation. You know, you get a job and they tell you, okay, you know, it's a 40-hour-a-week job, but then the boss comes in and says, we have a deadline and this isn't done, and, you know, I need you to work another 10 hours today. I need you to come in on the weekend. And if you say, but this is not our agreement, then they look at you and say, do you really want the job? So that's also stealing. It's actually stealing. Yes? It's nothing but stealing. But it's more polished. And frankly, all of our human relationships outside of Krishna consciousness are this kind of force. This is lust. Lust means that I want to take something from you. So if we're civilized, if we're karmis instead of vikarmis, then we have an agreement with someone. Okay, I make an agreement with you. You can take from me, but I will also be able to take from you. But everybody's trying to get the better deal. It's like when you go shopping, you like to buy things on sale, yes? Does anybody cry when it's a sale for the shop? Are you thinking, oh, this poor storekeeper, they have purchased this item for $20, and they are selling it for only 10, so they are losing money. No, you're happy. Oh, I got a deal. That is our general mood in dealing with people. We're willing to pay something. We're trained by our parents and by society. Don't be a thief and a rapist. So we're willing to pay for something, but we want to pay as little as possible. We want to get more than we pay for. We want to get a bargain. Of course, the other side also wants to get a bargain. This is the problem. The shopkeeper, they want to give you less value than you are paying. Otherwise, how are they going to make a profit? They want you to spend $10 for something that's only worth $1. And you want to spend $10 for something that's actually worth $100. And all of our material relationships, my dear friends, are exactly like this. Even between husband and wife, even between parents and child, between the government and the citizens, between the employer and the employee, all of our relationships are like this. We are trying to get a bargain at the other person's expense. And we try to do it carefully. If we want to have a long-term relationship with someone, then we try to do it very, very carefully. so we can keep milking our cow, so to speak. And therefore we are very unhappy. First of all, it's not our nature to be exploiters, and second of all, it's not very nice to be exploited. The cheaters and the cheaters. Cheaters and the cheated, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would say. So one day you wake up and you realize, everybody's trying to exploit me. Everybody who claims to love me, everyone who claims to care about me, they're all actually trying to exploit me. They're trying to get a bargain. They're dealing with me to get something from me, and whatever they give to me is simply a price they're paying to get something. And they're trying to pay the minimum price to get the maximum benefit from me, for themselves. They don't really care about me. And then when you become a little bit more awakened, you realize I am exactly the same. And I don't really care about anybody. My so-called caring is simply a price that I'm paying to get what I want. And the evidence of this is how angry we get when we don't get what we want. The fighting and the anger and the disappointment that we experience is because I haven't been able to force others to give me what I want. Real love is quite different. Real relationships, spiritual relationships, are quite different. They're on the platform of freedom. And Krishna says that the person who's experiencing this freedom, they have no need to depend on any other living being. They have no reason to do their work, and they have no reason to give up their work. So this is real love. Real love is very much tied with inner satisfaction and respect for others. So Hiranyakashipu had no respect for others, not even for the plants, because he had no inner satisfaction. We already went through this the other day. He's yelling at people for no reason, severely chastising them for no reason, and he's always intoxicated. Two main symptoms of a person who's not happy in themselves. So he's not satisfied in himself. If you're not satisfied in yourself, you will try to force others to satisfy you. You cannot be dissatisfied internally and yet respect others. It just doesn't work. This inner satisfaction will push us to try to get people to satisfy us. And when they don't satisfy us, we try to force them in some way. So the first thing, one has to become satisfied within. One has to become peaceful within. Bhaktiram yagatapa samsarvalok maheshram survidam sarvabhutanam gyatramam shanti vishichi brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochachina kanchachi. So if one realizes I'm a soul and I'm connected with Krishna, then one becomes satisfied. The parodharma, the real nature, our actual nature, is always to be satisfied. To feel this atmarama, to feel complete inner satisfaction. And then, brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochachina kanchi samasarveshu bhuteshu. Then you see everybody with equality. You don't see that, what is this friends and enemies? Friends and enemies means, a friend is somebody that I can exploit, and an enemy is someone I cannot exploit, basically. An enemy is someone who will not agree to let me take from them. Hiranyakashipu asked to have no enemies. In other words, he said, may I have it that everybody has to submit to me. Everybody must. This is our desire of the conditioned soul. Everybody must submit to me. I would like the world to be that anything I wanted, everybody and anything would have to supply it to me immediately. Just on my say-so. And that is what Hiranyakashipu got. But if one is satisfied from within, one doesn't see friends or enemies. Samasarveshu bhuteshu. One sees all living entities equally. One sees that everybody, Jivarasura, Pada, Krishna, Nityadas, everybody's meant to serve Krishna. Nobody's meant to serve me. And I don't need anyone to serve me because I have everything that I want. Then we can truly serve and respect others because we have nothing to get from them. We have nothing we want from them. We have everything that we need. It's like if you have everything that you need, And someone says, what can I give you as a gift? You say, nothing, I don't need anything. Yes? Have we had that experience? You have a refrigerator full of food, a kitchen full of food, and someone says, can I take you shopping to the grocery store? You say, no, my kitchen is full. I don't need anything. And if someone gives you something in that position, what will you do with it? What will you do with it? If you have all the food you need in your kitchen and someone brings you some food, what will you do with that food? You will give it away to someone else. Will you want anything in return? Will it be a bargaining thing? No, you'll just give it. So the devotee is like that. The devotee is full. Their kitchen is stocked, so to speak. In fact, they have more food than they can eat. Their heart is full. Their heart is overflowing. And therefore, they don't need anything from anyone. If anyone gives them something, they can immediately just give it away again. And they have no need to bargain with anyone or to exploit anyone. In fact, they have so much that from their own stock, they're constantly giving. And as they're constantly giving, they're constantly full. Just like Krishna's, Om Purnama Da Purnami Dam Purnam Purnadu Dachate Purnasya Purnamadeyam Purnameva Visishite. You take away the complete from Krishna, he remains complete. When we're connected with Krishna, the same happens with the liberated soul. If you're connected with the complete, then even if someone takes the complete away from you, you're still complete. Not on our own, but when we're connected with Krishna. Then there's no need, there's no impetus to exploit anyone or to force anyone. And someone in that position is fine with letting everything go through their natural cycles and their natural seasons. Just like Krishna has the six seasonal forests also in the spiritual world. And he also has a place where all the seasons appear at once. But it's different flowers, a different variety. Krishna likes variety and cycles. Not everything the same all of the time. So one who's in transcendental consciousness works with these natural cycles, both for themselves and for others. Just like Krishna says, one cannot be a yogi if one eats too much, eats too little, sleeps too much, or does not sleep enough. And one who's tempered in eating, sleeping, working, recreation can mitigate all pains by practice of the yoga system. So surrender to Krishna does not mean forcing ourselves or forcing others to go against the natural cycle and the natural rhythms and the natural ebbs and flow of the world. That's not what it means. Surrender to Krishna means going, like they say, go with the flow. But it really means that. Just like in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam with Dhruva Maharaj, it's explained that the nicest offering to Krishna are fruits and flowers that are grown locally and are in season. That is the most high-class offering. If you bring fruits and flowers from a distant place out of season, it's not a very nice offering. The best offering is when you pick it that day. You offer it that day. And that is the most first class. And according to Ayurveda, when you eat food that's grown locally and pick that day, it immediately turns into rasayana, immediately turns into energy for the body. And when you've experienced this, if you have a garden in your backyard and you grow your own fruits and vegetables and you pick them and you eat them that day that you pick them, you grow them organically. The taste is beyond compare, and the feeling of energy you get in your body. You feel energy, energized and vitalized, and your mind is sharp. The same with the animals. You know, the animals have their natural cycle of pregnancy and lactation and rest. You know, in the modern dairy farms, they're trying to force the animals to give milk constantly. They force them, they give them all kinds of drugs and antibiotics, and they milk them with machines. And so instead of their normal 20-year lifespan, after 5 years, their bodies are exhausted, and then they kill them. They're trying to force just like Hiranyakashipu is no different, they're trying to force the land to produce constantly, 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 like pouring poisons into the earth, and modifying the plants. tinkering with the plants so that they're putting fish genes in the vegetables and all these horrible things. Just to try to force more production, more production, more production, more production. Production all year, you know, and flying food all over the world so that you can eat strawberries in November. Actually, you're supposed to eat strawberries in June. So the modern world, they're just like Hiranyakashipu, exactly like this, all forcing, 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 forcing. And give the women birth control so they can have relationships anytime. Not respecting the woman's season. They don't respect the seasons of the animals. They don't respect the seasons of the plants and the trees. They don't even respect the seasons of the human beings. Work in the daytime, work in the nighttime. You know, what is the area of work where there's least respect for the seasons of human beings? Do you know? In which occupation are the natural seasons and ebbs of flow of human beings the least respected? Medicine. What kind of training do the doctors have? They are working in hospitals often without windows. They have to work these crazy, you know, 80, 120-hour weeks. Night shifts, day shifts. Ayurvedic medicine, one of the first things you learn is how to respect the seasons. How you should eat differently at different times of the year, and live differently at different times of the year and different times of the day. And the first thing modern medicine does is it breaks those cycles in the doctors themselves. How are the doctors going to give proper care to the human beings? So this is, Krishna consciousness means that we work with Krishna. We don't force. We don't force our bodies, our minds. We don't force others. We don't force nature. Surrender is not forcing. Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam vraja, surrender to me. This is not a military surrender. It's not like that. It's not like, you know, World War II, the Americans bombed Pearl Harbor. Americans bombed that, right? Hiroshima and Nagasaki with atomic weapons to force the Japanese to surrender. To force an unconditional surrender. Surrender without conditions. So it's not that they wanted it. They were forced. Of course, the result of that, like in Germany, you know, after World War I, the Germans were forced into an unconditional surrender. And the German people were so angry that when Hitler came and said, let's have another war, they said, yeah, let's get back at those people who forced us. So our surrender to Krishna is not like that. Surrender to Krishna means love. Surrender to Krishna means voluntary. Prabhupada said, be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. He said, that is management. That is management. Force is for the demons. Of course, criminals have to be forced, unfortunately. And as we are all criminals here, we have some regulations in the beginning that may have some bite to them. But that is not ultimately what we want to do. So in the beginning, there may have to be some force because we're demons. That's all we understand. But ultimately, that's not Krishna consciousness. And if we deal with Krishna consciousness like that, we'll become very unhappy. If we create a society like that, our society will be very unhappy. That's not the spiritual world is a world where there's no force at all. Everything is flowing spontaneously. Everything is giving spontaneously. And there are ebbs and flows. God and Krishna are together and then they're separated. And they're together and then they're separated. Madhya Yasoda and Krishna are together and then they're separated. They're together and then they're separated. Krishna's playing and then he's eating and then he's swimming and then he's getting dressed. Yes? There's variety. That is true even in the ultimate spiritual existence, what to speak of in this existence. And the irony is that when one works with Krishna and works with nature, then there will be abundance. Then there will be abundance. If there's love between people, they will give and sacrifice everything. Isn't that a fact? If you feel that someone actually loves you and is not trying to exploit you, won't you naturally give them everything? As soon as a person lets go of force, and as soon as someone doesn't try to force you at all, and completely respects you and really loves you, you give everything. And if someone's forcing you and exploiting you, you'll give very little, if anything. So all these demons running the earth, the earth doesn't want to give anything. So then they try to force. And they think, oh, we're getting so much more now than when we just, you know, don't force. But they don't understand. If you work with, if there's love, then the earth would give so much. The cows would give so much. We had one cow in London. She's not living anymore. We had one cow in London, the chief cow in the herd. She had one calf, and from after that one calf, she gave milk for 15 years. And she gave more milk than any of the other cows, even 15 years after having only one calf. We have one farm, I think, where the cows never had a calf, and she's giving. So if there's love, if we have love for Krishna, if we have love for Bhumi, if we have love for the animals, if we have love for the plants, for the trees, if we work with their natural rhythms, if we work with their natural harmony, there will be abundance. When Ramachandra was ruling the earth, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was ruling the earth, there was abundance everywhere. There was no need of forcing. All living entities will naturally give everything if they're treated with love. And if they're treated in accord with their nature and their cycles and their rhythms and their harmony. So that is Krishna consciousness. That is Krishna consciousness. It's working with Krishna and with Krishna's nature, not in opposition to it. We do not judge our surrender by how much we're going in opposition to Krishna's divine plan, but by how much we're working with it, so that we can examine how do I judge my own surrender? How do I judge the surrender of others? How much am I working with others with real respect? And how much am I trying to force and exploit? So, questions, comments? Huh? Oh, Mother Yasoda tied Krishna. And Krishna what? From a whole day he stayed away from Yasoda after that, yes, after she tied him up. He didn't want to sit on her lap even. Yes.
But no doubt Krishna wants to come pastime.
Yes. Yes, he wanted to deliver Nalakuvira money to it. So as I said, sometimes children you have to. Little children, you must. The little child doesn't want to put their shoes on, you just sit them down and you put their shoes on, even if they're screaming. What can be then? Sometimes. But that should not be the general way of dealing with children. That makes sense. Sometimes the animal, you have to put them on a leash and so forth. You have to put them in a cage. But not that generally you should be forcing against their nature. But anyway, that is Leela.
Apple, thoughts can be an example also in Mahabharata.
In what?
In Mahabharata, there is that example of horse training.
Uh-huh.
And one horseman brought a very strong horse, but not trained to Vishwadev's father, King Shantanu.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And everybody tried forcefully so that they can ride on the horse and they fail. But Vishwadev, as Devabrata, you know, he approached just naturally.
Yes, yes.
He just bowed down like that and he easily got in the head.
Now, thank you for that. Yes, that's their example of Bhishma when he was young. that he was able to train a wild horse that no one else, everyone else was trying to train by force. And he was able to train by understanding the nature of the horse and working with it. I mean, force must sometimes be used for criminals and for very little children. But it should be something unusual. It should be unusual. Generally, we work with love and with respect.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.